Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 61 of Nerd Pride Radio. 61, the maximum number of tables you can join together in a MySQL database query. Also, 61 is a Keith number. Yeah, seriously? If you want to find the perfect example of totally unapplicable recreational nerd mathematics, seriously, go look up Keith number. Yeah. Weird, huh? And yet, strangely hypnotic and fascinating. All right, but enough of that. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D / Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, a computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's probably like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As usual, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride Radio smells exactly like weaponized jalapeno. Oh, you've never heard? All right, well, let me tell you a little story. So, when we make up our menus at home, everybody gets a pick, all right? So each kid, mom, dad, we each have an item on the menu that this is going to be our meal, and we get to choose what it's going to be. And then after your meal gets eaten, you get to add a new meal to the menu, and we make sure we can go shop and we get stuff for everybody. All right. So my oldest son decides he wants spicy burgers for supper. That was going to be his meal. Spicy burgers with fries, blah, blah, blah. And so I said, well, what goes in a spicy burger? He says, I don't know. Just make it really spicy and get me some jalapenos to put on top of it. I'm like, all right, I can do that. Cool. So I'm making up some spicy burgers, and I dumped in a bunch of Tabasco sauce and spiced it up, and they were pretty hot by themselves, but then I sliced up the jalapenos to put on top. And as I got done slicing my jalapenos, I'm looking at my jalapeno slices and realizing, oh, these skins are really hard. These are like crispy, crunchy jalapenos. And, you know, I don't eat jalapenos on my burger or nachos or whatever very often, but when I do, oh, they're generally pretty soft. And so I think to myself, well, let's soften them up. Maybe if I just cook them a little bit, they'll soften up. And since everything else is pretty much done, I've got to do this quick. So I get just a little bowl of water, throw the jalapenos into it, stick it in the microwave for a couple of minutes, figuring it'll boil. The jalapenos will get cooked really quick. And sure enough, it worked perfectly. It did exactly what I wanted to when I pulled them out. They were nice and soft. What I did not anticipate is that when you put jalapenos, you cut them up and you put them in water, and then you let that water boil, it releases a fine jalapeno mist that wafts gently from the microwave and makes your skin burn. My lips and my eyes were tingling from the weaponized jalapeno I had just made in the microwave completely by accident. My boys are downstairs at the time, and so I'm yelling down to them, okay, guys, supper time. And so they come running up the steps. They got halfway up the stairs, and the jalapeno cloud just hits them in the face, and you can hear them choking. What the hell is that? They said, well, that's the oldest one. He's allowed to say hell. The others had milder language for it. And so, anyway, careful warning, don't boil jalapenos. Unless you're ready to face the mist. I suppose maybe if I had boiled them whole instead of slicing them up first, that would have done better to soften them up. But now you go online, there's all sorts of ways to remove the skin from a jalapeno without getting jalapeno mist in your eyes. Tear gas is what I made. It was horrifying. And yet, a really cool little bit of science. It was fun. So, enough of that. You know what we gotta do? We gotta get straight to the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about what's ever been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I whip out my pocket mod and I jot down that item on my master list, and then the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, first thing on the master list, as usual, updates. My weight is 258. I'm down a pound from last week. And my high score on Snake is 1,079. Suck on that. Holy crap. I mean, I went from 700 to 1,079. I'm covering just over 3/4 of the board. I am so on my way to the perfect game. And I realized that I'm not going to get the perfect game because try and plot out a perfect game on a Snake board. It is 11 squares high and 20 across. So the thing is with that even number going across, I have to do my windy snake pattern vertically, and I, for some reason, can't do the quick turnaround on the vertical. I just can't do it. I mean, I can get it like 2/3 of the time. Well, 2/3 of the time isn't good enough because you have to do it every single time. If I go horizontally left to right, I can wind that snake back and forth. I can completely fill the screen, but then when I get to the top, well, it's time to loop back, and I've left a whole blank row at the top. And I've got a couple ways to minimize that a little bit, but I am going to have to master the vertical windy pattern, because otherwise I'm never going to get this perfect snake game. But 1,079, holy crap, it was amazing. The next part of this, that's right. It's time for yet another installment in our all-too-frequent segment, Mike Was Wrong! I screwed up the music last week. Did any of you download the podcast right away when I posted it up? I'm an idiot. Yeah, instead of the Science Corner and William Shatner performing She Blinded Me with Science, I just put in the opening theme again. Apparently I wasn't paying attention. I never copied the new the William Shatner music. And so when we went to paste, it just used the last thing I had, which was the opening theme. And so I'm an idiot. And so it sounds doubly idiotic when you hear it and you're like, oh my God, he's playing the whole theme again. What the hell is this? And then I get to the end and go, that's right. It's my Science Corner. Yeah. Foolish me. I did correct it. So if you download a new copy now, or if you didn't download it until Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever. Well, I can't remember when I fixed it. Did I fix it Monday? Anyway, whatever. If you download it now, it's fixed. But I felt dumb. But that does bring me right into my my next segment.
Oppenheimer!
Oppenheimer, it's time for a little meta talk. Meta talk is where I pull back the curtain and talk to you about the podcast, the website, stuff like that. And first off, disclaimers. I've realized last episode especially, it's getting to the point where I repeat myself a lot. I cover topics I've covered before. I tell you stories that I've told you before. Some of the Podomatic entries turn out to be repeats, or if not repeats, someone asked a very similar question. I had, over the course of 61 episodes now, I have had no less than 3 people submit, hey, what size shoe do you wear? So I repeat myself a lot. And between talking here and talking to friends, because most topics that I want to do on the podcast, I actually bring up to friends and family first. And so, you know, if I've got a cool, interesting history thing, I'll spring it on my kids first and see if it's, you know, does it keep their attention? Yeah, does it? All right. Are they excited about it? Can I actually do a walkthrough of it and know what I'm talking about? Do I need to do a little more research? And so that's the only place I get real rehearsals on any of this stuff, is that anything I find interesting, a lot of times it's so interesting I can't wait to bring it to the podcast. I have to talk to it with everybody. And so I'll talk it through a few times. And so I get here to the podcast and I can't remember stuff that I've talked about with friends, or stuff I've talked about with you guys, or, you know, the story where I ran into a pole and blacked both my eyes. Did I tell you the guys that story on the podcast? I don't know. I might have, might not. But if not, I'll tell it again, that kind of thing. And so this is my disclaimer. Hey, I'm old and half senile, and I'm going to repeat myself a lot, and you guys are just going to have to deal with that, and I'm going to make a concerted effort to not stutter and stammer and waste time every single time going, oh, yeah, well, did I talk about this before? Did I? I can't. Oh, God, I might have covered this. Well, if not, all right, I'm not going to do that anymore. Well, I probably am going to do that, but I'm going to try not to. And you guys are just going to enjoy it because you know what? Even if you've heard my stories before, they're still fascinating. I'm hypnotic. You guys can't turn away. That's right. So that also, standard disclaimer, I mispronounce stuff all the time, especially foreign words and foreign names. I don't know how stuff is pronounced because I've only ever seen it in writing. So, if I mispronounce something, just deal with it. I apologize for that stuff all the time. I make a big disclaimer every single time going, okay, well, I'm going to probably butcher this, but I'll probably still do that. But that's my disclaimer. And also, the last disclaimer is about my weight. I'm reporting my weight every week on the podcast, which is really dull for most of you. I'm sure most of you really don't care, Mike. Why are you wasting our times with your weight? Well, because that's for me. Because it's actually to the point where I know I have to tell you guys every week. This is my Weight Watchers. This is my weekly weigh-in on Biggest Loser. I know that come Friday, Thursday or Friday, whenever I record, I know I'm going to have to come face you guys and tell you what I weigh for the week. And I'm not going to lie to you. So therefore, if I ever show up and I record a podcast and I don't tell you what my weight is, that means I gained weight and I'm just avoiding you now. Yeah, so call me on it. Because I've actually, in the last 2 weeks, I've had days where I actually stick to my diet. I turn away sweets. I make sure I'm getting some activity in my life, this kind of stuff. And I'm doing it specifically because, oh, yeah, that cheesecake looks awesome, but I can't because I got to talk to my podcast listeners on Friday, and I can't face them if I'm fat again. Well, I mean, I'm still fat, but you know what I mean. I'm down 16 pounds. It has been nice and steady since the beginning. I'm really happy with this. So I'm going to keep reporting it because it's for me, not for you, but I appreciate you guys helping me because honestly, if I wasn't reporting to you guys every week, I don't know if I'd still be sticking to it as well. I think I would have had more bad days. I think I'd be a little more discouraged with it. So this is helping. Thank you. That's it for my disclaimers. But as long as I'm in the MetaTalk section, I have had repeated questions from listeners asking me what my process is, what equipment I use, people who want to do podcasts of their own. And I'm not any kind of expert. I've been checking my stats, and every new episode I release, I'm getting regular 60 downloads within the first few days. So thank you guys. I appreciate the 5 dozen of you who are loyal, regular listeners. And then generally after that first week, usually another 20 to 50, sometimes more, sometimes less, just depending on what I've named the episode, I guess. I have no idea. But I'm getting some decent listeners, and I'm happy with that. I'm thrilled to be able to talk to you guys. And so, so to answer questions about my process, I think most of it's pretty transparent. I talk to you guys all the time about what I do and why. But, my tools, I'm using a really simple, microphone. It's from a company called CAD, CAD. I have no idea what that stands for, but it is CAD's, U1 USB dynamic recording microphone. So it's a U1 because it is the first USB microphone they made, I assume. So it's a CAD U1, and you can go to Amazon and you can buy one of these. It's a USB microphone with its own little mini stand, so you can set it on the table here. And you can get it on Amazon for $23.99. I mean, they're dirt cheap, and the quality I get makes me very happy. I'm not recording music. I'm not worried about my voice quality. The sound that I get out of this, I really like it. I think this works really well for me. I'm very happy with this microphone. My problem with it is I can't have guests on very easily because I only have one microphone, and therefore, I would have to share if somebody is sitting down with me, and that has turned out to be really awkward in the past when I've had my kids on and stuff. You guys have seen that. And I think if I want 2 USB microphones, because my recording software makes me choose what microphone I'm using, I think I would have to have a mixing board. I think I would need some kind of device that takes inputs from both microphones. So if I want to get to the point where I'm doing guests, I'm going to have to really invest. I mean, other than R2. R2's easy. He just sits under the microphone. Anyway, that's what I use for my hardware. That's it, a microphone. And then, of course, my laptop and Audacity. Audacity software is my recording software. I cannot recommend it enough. It is completely free. I got mine from download.com, And I love Audacity. It is extremely dynamic, extremely useful. It has all sorts of sound mixing and editing tools, lots of cleanup stuff. It's really, really cool, and it's not difficult to figure out. So if you're interested in doing your own podcast, honestly, anyone can do what I do. You need a laptop and a microphone and the will to just sit down and talk to people, and it's really, really fun. I highly recommend it. But on to my process. Honestly, I sit down and I record, and that's the end of it. What you hear lately, when I first started this, I would spend, after each recording, I would spend up to about 2 hours picking through it, making sure all of my levels were perfectly even, making sure that, and the sound quality still was crap. You guys remember that. It was taking out any of the long pauses. I would do multiple takes of stuff. If I screwed up on the intro, if I got halfway through and stumbled over which kind of nerd I was, I'd cough, stop, put in a long pause so I knew to go in and edit, and I'd start my intro over. And so I was winding up with multiple takes of stuff and picking out the best ones. I was taking out everywhere. I do that a lot. I've decided, screw you guys. You can just listen to me and aw and whatever. Because it's how I talk. This is what I sound like when I have conversation with anybody. So I just leave it all in. And so I don't edit anything really. I mean, I get done talking and it is straight through. What you hear on the podcast is exactly what I record. The only exception being when I get done, I go into Audacity and it takes about 10 minutes. I take out the static that comes with, I mean, whatever the ambient noise of the room is. That's why, actually, at the beginning of every podcast where you hear me go, silence, that's actually my call for, because I always mark that spot. That's where my official silence is. I say silence, and then I have 10 seconds of official silence. And then that's my background ambient noise. That's where I get my bass levels from. And so therefore, after I'm done recording, I pick up that silence and I go, okay, that's what the ambient noise sounds like. Remove that from the whole podcast. Boom. There's my cleanup. And since I was yelling silence every week, I decided to start leaving it in at the beginning as my opening. And then the other thing that I do is the music. I don't, the way this software works, I'm sure there is a way for me to actually play all of my musical pieces live, hook them up as a soundboard, and then just be able to hit the button for intro, hit the button for Science Corner, hit the button for Gaming Table, whatever. But I haven't worked out how to do that. So that's my one thing, is all the bumper music and the opening and closing, I just leave a blank space there, and I just know to go drop those in, which is how I screwed up the sound last week, obviously. But other than that, what you hear is what I recorded. I mean, it's exactly as I talk it out, and I love doing this. And that's it. I mean, if I wanted to, with that, once I got to that point, this is what has made this podcast so easy for me, is that I record, and it takes me an hour, hour and a half to go through the recording process. When I get done with sound cleanup, drop in the music, write up some copy because I need to put some descriptors on it, upload it to my website, post it out. All of that, I could conceivably, from the moment I get done recording, conceivably, I could have the whole thing up and ready to download to your device in 45 minutes if I wanted to. That would be really pushing it, but I could do that because I stopped doing all the extra work. So if for anyone who's interested in doing your own podcast, because my oldest son is interested in doing, he's going to do a video series is what he's hoping to set up. They're putting in some preliminary work for it right now. But I told him, look, dude, the real key to this is minimal work. Minimal work. Not because you're lazy, although we all are, but because you're a busy person. You've got lots of other things in your life. And if putting out a podcast every week took me 5 hours, like it used to, well, then it's easier to put it off. It's easier to skip it. Whereas now, you know, it's an hour to 2 hours worth of recording time, which I love doing. That's the fun part for me. And then the actual, you know, cleanup and getting it posted, that stuff, yeah, it's 45 minutes to an hour, but most of it is I'm just waiting for things to convert. I can go out and play games or watch TV or do something else while that's all converting and uploading and all that stuff. I just have to go in, click a button, come back 10 minutes later. So it's very, very little post-recording work. That's the key for me, and that's what's allowing me, especially this year, this season, since school started in the fall. I've been getting out an episode every single week so far, and I'm hoping to keep up this pace by making it as simple as possible. And then we'll see what happens when we get to next summer. My dream is to one summer, come around to a summer and not take the summer off. Actually get regular content out all summer long, even if it's just every other week. I would love to do that, but, you know, I have the best of intentions every single year, and yet I completely wind up failing on it. So I'm going to have to figure that one out. But anyway, is that it? Yeah. So after that, it's time to visit my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it's on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. I'm kind of wishing I have so much stuff to do here. I'm going to shortchange the Podomatic by the end of the show. I really wish I had clipped this one out. Maybe we should save this for next week. Here's the deal. Playing Pathfinder with my kids, and we're hitting a moral / alignment conundrum, for lack of a better word. The kids are playing a half-elf barbarian, a half-orc sorcerer, and a goblin bard. Plus, they also have a non-player character, a kobold cleric. The goblin is the only evil character in the group. Taking a cue from Belkar Bitterleaf, he decided he wanted to give a shot at being an evil character in a good group. And so far, it's been pretty interesting. They get some decent conflict going between them, and yet, because of their situation, they all rely on each other, and they've formed a loyalty to one another, even though one of them's evil and the others are not. And I'm playing in a world where you can't judge an individual by his or her race, so that when they the biggest bastards in the world so far, halflings. Everyone in the group cannot stand halflings because the halflings have been pretentious and self-righteous. And the halflings are mostly neutral good and lawful good. They are good people, but kind of judgmental about it. And so they've had some run-ins with halfling paladins who basically judge them at their face and start taking them on. They just assume that, look, hey, you've been hanging out with the goblins. Obviously, you're part of the criminal element, blah, blah, blah. So halflings are the real bad guys so far. But they've run into dark elf people who are pretty evil, but, you know, we make a tentative alliance with them. They ran into some goblins and kobolds in villages that they actually got along pretty well with. Turns out that they weren't bad people at all, not a problem. And now they're in town. They have hooked up with a band of goblin circus performers. And so, I don't know how much detail you guys want, but it's a troop of like 12 or 13 goblins who have a half-orc who is their face, their representative. And so they are a circus troupe that rolls into town, and essentially, hey, because the half-orc is in charge, people are willing to kind of deal with him because, oh, the goblins, look, they're all just being cute little clowns. They're all rolling around, and they're being funny and slapstick and all this. And so people are willing to accept goblins as performers as long as they're in character, as long as they're in costume. So that's the way you can get a human city to accept them in, is because basically it's, oh, well, they're your pets. I get that. Okay. And so our guys are hanging out with them. The goblin bard in our own group is, you know, thrilled to find some like-minded individuals. And so they're traveling together. They're doing some performances. The other members of the group are acting as bodyguards. It's all going really well. And so I decided to throw them a curveball, and I put them in a situation where, these goblins have been really nice to them. They've been getting along with them really well. Things seem to be going great. And now they've found the goblins, some of them, sneaking out in the middle of the night. So they have their performances in the evening. They entertain the kids. They do a wonderful job. And then at night, they're sneaking out. And so we kind of trail them a little bit, figure out where they're going. And they finally go, oh, well, no, no, we do our performances over here, and this is great, and we make some decent money. But the real money is at night we sneak over to the rich portion of town, and we're casing out some joints, and we're going to break in, and we're going to get the real hall is over there where the rich people live. So that's what we're going to do. Stealing, it's like, all right, well, stealing's okay with us. We can do that. That's fine. And then, okay, well, here's the plan. This is going to be kind of complicated, but because of the political stuff going on in this town, there's rival families. What we're going to do is we're going to stage a murder and we're going to frame the other side for it. And so when the stuff turns up missing, they're just going to assume that it was thugs from their rival house. And therefore, they'll all fight with each other. They'll never even come over to this side of town to look at us. It'll be great. So, okay, so now we're talking about committing murders in order to cover up our theft. This is getting into real evil territory. I mean, the stealing is, you know, morally questionable at best, but, you know, maybe you can find a way to look the other way, but this is just straight up murder. And so it turns out that as much as, you know, we've been kind of playing reversed roles, that, that the traditionally evil races have been not so evil, and the traditionally good races have had reasons to be at odds with our players. Like I said, I just wanted to play on expectations a little bit. But now, to teach them a lesson, it's like, you know, just because someone's traditionally that evil side and you guys are, you know, making some coin here on being outsiders and trading with your evil buddies, as it were, that doesn't mean they're good guys. Just because they're willing to accept you and be your friend doesn't mean they're good people. And so I'm putting them in a situation where, okay, are you willing to go real evil? You're going to go full evil on this just because they're your friends and you've been hanging out with them? And of course, the bard in our group says, well, yeah, I'm evil myself. I'm a goblin. I don't have any problem with a little bit of murder if it's going to make us some buck. I mean, as long as we're not going to get caught, I'm good with this. Let's go. And immediately, as I was hoping, the elf pipes up with, whoa, hold on, back up, murder? I don't think I can let you do that. And now here's where my problem is. And this is this was the conflict I wanted. I wanted them to talk this out, work it out amongst themselves, have him decide, okay, do I go out behind my partner's backs? Because as much as he may be evil, he's also really happy to have now thrown in with some people that he knows he can rely on. And they're calling themselves the Black Scale Guild. And they've got a name for their group and they feel like total badasses. And so even if you're chaotic evil, everyone likes having A, a little bit of security, and B, they like feeling like a badass. He likes the community. He likes his little family. And so, okay, so does he go behind their backs and do this anyway? Or does he turn away his new goblin friends and go, yeah, dudes, I get what you're doing, but I can't. I've got this thing over here. No, instead, this is the problem. He's the oldest in the group. He's my 16-year-old. He's managed to talk them into thinking it's okay. I'm like, oh man. So what do I do? Do I talk to the younger kids? Cause they're 8 and 11. And if their 16-year-old brother tells them, you know, rationalizes it and tells them it's okay to go out and murder in the game because that's what his character would do. And oh, don't worry about it. We won't get caught. And they're willing to go along with that. I'm really teaching the wrong lesson here. I need to, you know what? Now that I've talked that with you guys, no, you're right. I need to stand up to this. I need to go to my 11-year-old and just ask him some questions about, hey, so what kind of character are you playing? Yeah? How does he feel about murder? How does he feel about this? How does he, and not tell him that, hey, you need to go do something, but rather remind him of who he is and what, because he has some very noble ideals when he created this character. He's a protector. As an elf barbarian, he's a protector of the little guy. That was his motivation. And I need to go talk to him. I need to remind him of that. Thank you. That's what I needed. I needed some direction here. This is why I was hesitant about talking about this, because I didn't know where I was going with it. But yeah, you know what? This is a learning opportunity for him that, you know, hey, your older brother is playing evil. It's okay that his character does those things because that's the character that he chose. But you're a good person, and what does a good person do? And have him work that out, and then it'll be hopefully some very interesting conflict when Zog, our bard, decides to go head on out into the night to do his murderous whatever, and someone's going to have to stop him. Lem, by the way, elf's name is Lem. Zog and Lem. And what's the half-orc's name? I can't even remember anymore. It's not Fang. He's played several half-orcs all named Fang. And I think he's got a different name this time. I can't remember what it is. Meh, I'm not going to look it up. I'll remember eventually, and by then I won't be recording. It'll be too late. So anyway, that's what's been going on in my gaming world. Also, as long as I'm on, I mean, literally just an hour ago, Rika on my website, we're looking at, Elihad and I have wanted to play a Firefly game forever. We have wanted to play Firefly for so long. A space western in a gritty, but swashbuckling kind of universe. oh, yeah, I want to be Captain Mal. I want to play this game. I want to do it. And we've never quite found the right setting. We've found some Firefly-esque sorts of things, but we've never put together something really substantive that lasted. And so Eli just brought it back up and said, hey, why don't we try this? And he's taking an old setting of mine, God's Dice, which is it's in a lot of ways, it's similar to GURPS's Transhuman Space. It's not that's way oversimplified, but it's like that. Humans have expanded to fill the solar system, blah, blah, blah. He says, all right, what if we take that setting, which he's always loved and I've always loved? He says, what if we take that setting and now fast forward it a few hundred years so that we have some sort of faster than light travel, some plot drive, as he calls it, traveling at the speed of plot. And he says, and so what if we have multiple star systems? He says, now we just need a reason to figure out, you know, why everything's, you know, why everyone's so poor and why everything's so gritty and wild westy. And I'm like, all right, cool. We can do this. So we've come up with some ideas that'll make the world work. And I'm sure those are going to be refined. I just threw out the stuff, just came right off the top of my head. But then we're talking about what kind of game system we want to use for it. This is the real point I'm bringing up, is what kind of game system do we want to use for it? And we're batting stuff back and forth, and Rika suggests Strands of Fate. And I'm recommending this having just purchased the PDF. Like, literally, she makes the recommendation. I went out and read a review on it, and I went, oh, my God, because I've always been hypnotized by Fate. I own Fate, and I love Fate. But Strands of Fate, by a different company, has a different conception on how to work the stats, and it looks a little simpler, and for the swashbuckly kind of stuff we want to do, looks really perfect. And so I've just bought the PDF. I've barely glanced at it, but I'm so excited about this. So I will come back and tell you guys more about this game system, and hopefully, and it won't be for a while, but down the road, we'll set it up on Roll20. We'll actually do some playtesting of this, and see if we can get a setting that works, because I think this is going to work really well. I'm so excited about it, but I'll talk to you about it later. But if you're interested, it's Strands of Fate and by Void Press. I can't remember who makes it, but just do a search for Strands of Fate. There it is. It's $8.99 from them. That's what I paid. And they have a print version of the book, but it's out of print. And so if you find it, it's way overpriced. Don't even bother. But check it out, because I'm really enjoying this idea. And like I say, I've barely looked at it, but I'll tell you more when I get really into it, which I'm going to. And that is enough of my gaming table. Next up. Oh, next up is the Science Corner with the right music this time.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
See, I got it right. And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Voyager. The Voyager spacecraft. We all know about the Voyager. I love Voyager. I love the Voyager and Voyager 2. Why? Because I remember when they were launched back in 1977, 1978. I remember being in the dentist's office and picking up a magazine. There was the highlights, and then there was another magazine right next to it that had the Voyager spacecraft on the cover, and I read the entire article. I can't remember if it was Time, Newsweek, National Geographic. It could have been anything. I read the entire article beginning to end, and I was hypnotized. I was 7 years old and hypnotized by it, because we were sending out something to go visit Neptune. I mean, we're going to visit all the planets, all the outer planets. And then after that, it's going to leave the solar system. And I remember at 7 years old, I'm reading it, and it was like, oh, yeah, it'll be there in 20 years. It'll be there in 30 years. It'll leave the solar system. I mean, it was so far away. I remember being 7 years old and being so disappointed, because I did the math in my head and went, oh, my God, I'm going to be 30-something before that thing gets anywhere. Well, this is so unfair. It's like waiting for the James Webb Space Telescope. I mean, that's only 2018. And you know how excited I am about James Webb, and I'm having to wait 4 years now for that, and it's killing me. Yeah, I'm a 44-year-old man, and waiting 4 years for this space telescope is just driving me crazy. Imagine what it did to a 7-year-old who's having to look at, oh, my God, I have to wait 4 of my lifetimes before anything happens? Oh, but it all did. That's the thing, is that all that stuff that 7-year-old me was so excited about and so disappointed that it was going to take so damn long, it all happened. And Voyager did everything, and Voyager has now left the solar system for like the 10th time. They keep announcing over and over, oh, it's past the orbit of Pluto, it's left the solar system. Oh, no, wait, it's past the solar bound, it's past the, it's, okay, now it's really officially left the solar, okay. They're outside the solar system, they're on their way. They have about 6 more years in them. They're still reporting back. Their instruments are still working, doing what they're supposed to do. They keep reporting back to us. And in 2020 or so, they're no longer be able to get enough solar power to keep their instruments running. And so they'll shut down and they'll just drift until probably until the end of time. But potentially they'll just drift until they run into something. Someone picks them up, whatever. But I'm looking at Voyager because I heard a whole bunch about the golden records. All right. That's... They have a golden record in them, and the golden record in its aluminum sleeve comes with a record player, and the record player has visual instructions on it. So if someone is, if some civilization is smart enough to spot a Voyager and capture it and bring it in, then they're also smart enough to figure out our instructions. And the golden record has a bunch of analog pictures on it that they can decode. They give images of stuff from Earth and explanation. They give instructions on how to find Earth. So, instructions that should be good for, you know, another 20, 30, 50,000 years at least. I don't know how long they're going to last. I mean, stars shift position, but essentially it's, hey, here's these landmarks within our galaxy, assuming you're in our galaxy. Here's these landmarks within our galaxy. If you can find those landmarks, then you can use those to find us. We're right here. Come listen for our radio signals. We'll be there. We have music on there. We have sounds of Earth. We have greetings in 55 languages. We have all sorts of great stuff for the aliens to look at when they finally find it. Now, oh, but before that, you're thinking record player. That seems a little antiquated. Well, it was 77, for God's sake. But also, the record is sturdy, and it's nearly permanent. It's made of gold. It's not going to tarnish or degrade or break down. It's pretty impervious to stuff. That record will still be good whenever they find it. All right. So that's the first part. But did you know, you think that's antiquated? Do you know what the Voyager spacecraft, because the two of them are identical, absolutely identical crafts built to the exact same specs. Do you know what they use for data storage on Voyager? Now go on, take a guess. Yeah, no. Give me the most ludicrous guess you could imagine for data storage, remembering that this is the late 70s. Yeah, exactly. 8-track tape. I am not jerking you here. 8-track tape. It's digital 8-track to store all of their data. That is beautiful. I could not have come up with a better fact about Voyager. I thought that was spectacular. But beyond that, here's the thing I'm thinking. I don't even know if I've got this one hashed out properly in my brain yet. But I have an idea in my mind that let's assume that someone finds Voyager. Let's assume an intelligent species finds Voyager, one of them, and they get the instructions. And they've found it in a timely enough fashion that there are actually still humans on Earth. They can actually come and visit us. And let's assume that it's soon enough that we are relatively the same people that we are now. All right, maybe more technologically advanced, but human nature being what it is, we're still people. Okay. So they come to visit us. What's going to happen? Because we're going to welcome them with open arms. We said on that record, we played them some of the most beautiful music of Earth in our estimation. We played them the sounds of Earth. We did everything to entice them and say, welcome, welcome. We're awesome. You're awesome. Come visit us. We want to see you. We want to make contact. We want to learn more about the rest of this universe. Please come be our friends. All right. We said that and we meant it. We meant it sincerely. The people who put this thing together meant that with all of their hearts. And when they show up, the vast majority of humanity, while some of us will be scared, some will be worried, there's going to be some fear mongering. For the most part, I honestly think most of humanity would welcome this and go, oh my God, this is amazing. Think of the things we could learn. Think of how awesome this is. Okay. But the aliens would get here and we'd work with them and we'd talk. We'd set up a common language, a method of communication. We would share science and information and stories and just talk. And then there would be people in political power who, just like every single other thing that happens, people in political power who need to manipulate this situation to their own benefit. How can I use this to either, you know, solidify my base, to use scare tactics to stir up, concern about biological hazards of these aliens, or scare up, you know, oh, what if they're going to invade us, or, oh my God, the aliens are what? People are going to use this intentionally for their own benefit. And, all right, that's just political machination. What about the people who, oh yeah, but look at this technology. This is great that we have this open sharing, but imagine if I could get a hold of some of that tech and keep it for myself. What if I could get the patent on that and I could open this up to the world? And what if I could make billions off of this? There's so many people, so many opportunists who are going to see aliens as a chance for money or power or fame, and they're going to use them and they're going to want to exploit them. And hopefully, if they're smart enough to catch a Voyager and make their way here and meet us, hopefully they're also smart enough about the nature of intelligent people that they know what that's about and they can protect themselves from it. But what are they going to think of us when that happens? What would we think of them if the shoe were on the other foot? Let's imagine that we get, you know, our SETI operations have picked up a signal in the sky, and we've got an actual message from another intelligent civilization that says, hey, is anybody out there? Because here's where we are, and we're awesome, and you're awesome, and you should come out and be our friends. What if we got that signal, and we went out and we actually visited them? And here, they have this beautiful message of peace telling us about how wonderful their planet is and that we should come visit them. And then we get there, and while they put on a smiling face and we see all these happy people glad to see us, wait a minute, secretly, look at all these people trying to screw us over. Are we going to be able to tell the difference and go, oh, you know what? The majority of them are just like the majority of us, and we're all good people. All right. And it's just these ones that are trying to take advantage of us, these are just isolated individuals. Or are we, as we tend to do, are we just going to assume that, oh God, it was all a trick? Oh, they lured us in with their happy face and now they're trying to stab us. Ah, is that how we're going to deal with it? Because I think that's what we would do. I think we would, there would be a few people smart enough to realize what's going on, but I think the vast majority of human beings would see this process, and instead of being able to tell, oh, they have good people and bad people just like we do, no, they'd just go, oh my God, all aliens are duplicitous and deceptive and trying to eat our brains. That's what we would do. And we would panic and we would hate. And that's where racism comes from. And that's where all sorts of hatred, because we're so afraid of the other. And I don't mean to make this into a big political diatribe. I'm not doing that. This is just as a conceptual science fiction piece in my head. Can first contact really work? I mean, are we going to be able to get over that? I mean, because they're going to be amazingly alien as it is. They're not going to come down and just be humans with pointed ears or humans with horseshoe crabs on their head. It's not, they're going to be alien. They're going to be wildly, freakishly different, most likely hideous, and in many ways, disgusting and or repulsive to us. It's very unlikely that we're going to get a really cute photogenic alien. All right. More than likely, they're going to be, these huge insectile creatures or plant-based tendril things or some kind, you know, who knows? Are we going to be able to see past that? And even though they all look alike to us, are we going to be able to see past that and realize that, no, they are individuals? Are we going to be able to know? And if someone finds Voyager and they come find us and they see this vast sea of humanity with this great shining welcoming face, and then they come down and we have all of our select elements that are trying to stab them in the back and exploit them and take advantage of them, are they going to be able to see past that? I don't know. Man, I hope they're smarter than we are, because I don't have a whole lot of faith in humanity's ability to deal with that. But maybe we can. Maybe, I mean, we get more enlightened slowly, piece by piece, every generation. Maybe by then we'll have a clue on how to handle it. I mean, we probably have at least a good 30,000 years before we have to deal with it. So maybe we'll make some advances in that time, but maybe we won't. Okay. You know what I haven't done in a long time? That's right. I haven't done a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you're very, very close. See, pull the curtain back a little bit. That's another one that Gonzo's voice, he's just pre-recorded. I have to drop him later. So I actually didn't hear anything there. I just left the space for it, and now I'm responding to dead air. So there you go. The illusion is shattered. Isn't that terrible? I shouldn't even have told you guys. Should have just left the mystery there, let you think that Gonzo's in the room with me, because I'm sure that's what you already thought. My nerd culture report. Hey, real quick, and I'm never real quick, but let's try anyway. Where is all the rage against Apple for this whole iCloud hack thing? Seriously. Obviously, look, the cloud gets hacked, and nude pictures of lots of celebrities get leaked, and we fortunately, I'm glad to see the response that we're getting, which is that we're not slut-shaming these women for the most part, like at least the intelligent portion of the world and the internet is making a real effort to make sure that, hey, look, these women are victims for God's sake. They didn't do anything wrong. They had pictures of themselves for their personal use to share with their intimate partners. And it's their own private property and someone broke into their house and stole it from them. All right. Yeah. You can call it the idea that they're called leaked photos. No, they were stolen just because they're out in the cloud and someone, has the brute force to commit a felony and hack someone's password and break into their account does not make it a leak. It is the exact same as if they had personal pictures in their own house and someone broke in and stole them, all right? It's just straight-up thievery. And all of the blame for that goes on to these hackers. All of it goes on to the people who grabbed the photos in the first place and then disseminated them, all right? Those people are horrible, horrible people. But on top of that, why am I not getting the outrage against Apple? Because, of course, Apple's denying that this was a hack. They say, oh, no, the cloud wasn't hacked. This was targeted brute force attacks against very select individuals that had nothing to do with our security. Baloney. All right. Because and for some reason, we keep buying that. Why are we buying that? Why are we believing them? Because, of course, they're going to say that. They were going to say that even if they got caught red-handed giving away personal property and pictures. They could have been selling state secrets to the Chinese, for God's sake. Could have been caught red-handed, and of course they're going to deny it. Of course they're going to look at you and go, what, me? That was not us. No, I don't care what you have on camera. We did not do that. So of course they're going to say that. So why are we believing them? All right, why are we not looking at the actual facts? Because the actual facts is they had someone pointed out to them 6 months ahead of time and said, dude, you realize that if I use this portion of your system, I've tried 20,000 different passwords so far and nobody has stopped me. I'm trying a single account. I have slammed 20,000 passwords in a row into that thing and they've all failed, but no one's stopping me. I can just set up my bots to keep hitting these things a million times and no one will ever stop me. You guys have to do something about this. And Apple said, wow, what system is that on? Can you replicate that? They said after 2 months, they had this information and they finally responded after 2 months and went, wow, can you replicate that? Because we don't even really think that's a vulnerability. I mean, seriously, someone would have to go to a lot of work to make that work for them. That's not, it's just, we don't think it's that big a deal. That's what they said. Now, the reality is, well, yeah, it's a lot of work to set up a bot and then just let it run forever. That's not really a lot of work. It's just time consuming. And you completely underestimate the lengths people will go to break into a celebrity's account for something. Holy crap. The potential that there's going to be nude pictures out there. Oh my God. They'll do it. If that vulnerability is there, they're going to do it. And Apple sat on that for 6 months. 6 months, right? And then the scandal hits and the photos are all out there and everyone is outraged and we have our big brouhaha going on. And Apple's immediate response is, first off, they patched that security flaw. They patched it immediately, like within hours. They had it patched because they could have done that at any time. Rather than making any kind of a question of it, rather than going, well, we don't even think it's that big a deal. It took them hours. It took them moments, no effort at all to get it fixed. And then at the same time that they're fixing it, they're going, yeah, but it wasn't a cloud breach. We promise you it wasn't a cloud breach. I mean, yes, we did patch the cloud, But that wasn't really, it wasn't our fault. We didn't do that. I mean, yes, we fixed it, but it wasn't us, I swear. I can't believe we let him get away with that. I can't believe. And the worst part of the whole thing is that now, okay, and when I say worst, I mean worst for me, is that there are now nude pictures on the internet of Jennifer Lawrence and Kate Upton and Ariana Grande, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Kirsten Dunst, Hayden Panettiere. Other than Kirsten Dunst, I would want to see nude pictures of all of those women. That sounds wonderful, but I can't. I haven't looked at them. I so want to. I mean, that's what incognito mode is for, right? So you can go look up nude pictures of celebrities. But before I had a chance to ever look any of these up, I saw some of the banter going back and forth on the internet and the idea that, you know, immediately it came out, yeah, these women are victims. This is the fact that this got done to them and the fact that people keep wanting to find these pictures and people keep looking at them only encourages more attacks like this. It's wrong. And I felt so guilty because when I first heard about the whole hack, my first thought was, oh, wow, I wonder what those are like. And then I read more, and by the time I got to a position where I could actually go look for them, I felt way too guilty, and I can't. I can't do it. As much as I would love to, I can't go download any of those pictures. I can't go look at them because it's wrong. It's really, really wrong. And I got to stand on principle on this. And I mean, Lord knows. Yeah, okay, it would be really great to see Jennifer Lawrence naked because she's really awesome. But there's millions, I mean, literally millions of photos of really beautiful naked women out there who voluntarily put those naked pictures on the internet. People who wanted you to look at them naked. And therefore, if I really want to see naked women, there's lots of ways I can do that without having to violate somebody's privacy. So, I mean, why do I need to see that specific person? There's nothing to be gained by that. So, I don't do it. I encourage you not to do it, although, obviously, if you're the kind of person that's going to look, you probably already have. But I encourage you not to. I encourage you to stay away from them. As new ones come out, oh, Kim Kardashian had leaked pictures, and to which she's expressing her outrage. This is terrible of me, but I mean, really, Kim, who cares? I mean, seriously, we've seen it all already. It almost... This is the really cynical part of me. It's almost like, yeah, you know what? Did you leak them yourself just so you could be part of this? I mean, did you? But that's unfair. That's wrong. That's really wrong. I shouldn't even think like that, but I couldn't help it. So again, don't do it. Don't contribute to this behavior. It's not, I mean, not that our, you know, minor protest by our absence is going to make any difference to the world, but maybe we can spread a mindset that makes the world a little more fair, maybe. And hold Apple accountable, for God's sake. What is wrong with them? I mean, yes, we need to find these guys and we need to prosecute. But you know what? Apple is not blameless. And they're talking about, oh, well, they're going to take some hits with their shareholders. I mean, this security breach, oh, they're not. Not significant. I mean, seriously, are people already standing in line for the iPhone 8? I mean, seriously, they will be there and lined up for the next Apple product just like they always have. This is not a detriment to them, honestly. So, what's up next? Time for a little Roku! I, of course, have been watching X-Files, which I love. Lately I've been seeing a lot of Dexter's Lab. Because my kids have been watching Dexter's Lab, which is just heartwarming because I forgot how much I love Dexter's Lab. Those are some really funny episodes. On my list, I've got Fringe and Blacklist that I'm probably going to be watching soon. I think whenever I get some free time, that's going to be my next stuff. But yeah, I still got X-Files and I'm still, you know, like 8 episodes behind Kumail here on his X-Files Files podcast. So it may be a while for those, but. One of the other things that comes up on our Roku a lot, Roku, is procedurals. This is my wife's fallen asleep TV. All right? My wife is one of those who, she's a worrier. Her mind is always going. She's constantly thinking about stuff that needs to get done and what she has to get ready for tomorrow and what to do. Oh, and we can't forget to do this. And her mind doesn't stop. And therefore, it's really tough for her to fall asleep. Me? I am so easily distracted. I will lay down going, oh, wait a minute. You know what would be really cool for my Pathfinder character? and I'm asleep. That's it. I mean, my mind just trails off into blissful nothingness, and then I'm asleep. I can fall asleep in 5 minutes every single time. But my wife can't. And so for her, she likes to play TV that gives her some background noise, but isn't really stuff that she has to pay attention to. All right. So the best one, Crossing Jordan. We've run through every episode of Law and Order SVU. We watched some NCIS for a while, got kind of tired of it. And so she came up with Crossing Jordan. She's like, I've never seen Crossing Jordan. Let's see if that one works. She's never made it through the first episode. She plays episode one. She's asleep within 15 minutes every single time. And so the next night it's like, well, do you need something to fall asleep to? You want to try Crossing Jordan again? Yeah. You ready for episode two? Nah, not yet. I didn't see the end of the first one. Okay. So we play the first one again. Right asleep. She's done that like four times. She's never gotten through a whole episode of Crossing Jordan. It's actually kind of funny. But the reason I bring up the procedurals is, especially Criminal Minds. I like Criminal Minds. All right. I understand the completely unrealistic nature of this. I know the whole show is bullshit. I get that. That's not. I don't care. It's fiction. It's fantasy. And I enjoy the characters and I enjoy the process. And it's gotten to where, it's pretty formulaic and I can guess, you know, like SVU. I had to stop watching Law and Order SVU because the moment the real killer showed up on screen or the real rapist or the real, whoever the bad guy was for the week, the moment they showed up on screen, I would be able to go, oh, there's our killer. Got it. I mean, it didn't matter if it was the first 5 minutes of the show. It didn't matter if it was 15 minutes in. Whenever the real killer finally showed up, yep, that's them. Because it's so predictable. SVU is such a, they have a real set formula. And after, you know, how long have they been doing? 83 years, I think, for that show. It's predictable. So, and Criminal Minds is getting to be that way for me. I've seen enough Criminal Minds that I'm starting to get to where, yeah, okay, I get it. Yeah, nope, there he is. I get it. We're done. But I still find the show a little interesting. But here's the problem I have with it, is my problem is Penelope Garcia. And if you've never seen the show, Penelope is Kirsten Vangnes. Is that the actress who plays her? I think so. But Penelope Garcia is their quirky hacker computer expert. She's the gal who can break into any system. And They've got the quirky nerd girl on NCIS who plays the same sort of role. On Warehouse 13, it's Allison Scagliotti's character. What is her name? Claudia. Claudia, whom I love. Oh, God, I love her. And not Allison Scagliotti, although I'm sure she's fine. But I don't know Allison Scagliotti. But I do know her character, Claudia, from Warehouse 13, who... Warehouse 13 is a silly show. It's silly and stupid and wonderful in so many ways. Oh, watch Warehouse 13. It's great. It's on Netflix streaming and it's just so much fun for all of its stupidity. I would love to play a game set in that world doing that job because it's just fun and it lets you do anything you want. It's great. But anyway, those characters who can hack any system, who can get you any piece of information you need, it finally occurred to me that in the same way that Jack Bauer was like the poster boy for government-sponsored torture, which everyone agrees that torture's wrong, all right? We all agree that torturing people is bad, but Jack Bauer in 24 made torture an acceptable evil. It's something that, you know what, in order to stop the terrorists, we have to get information out of this guy immediately, and to do so, I'm going to have to do a little torture. Sorry, that's just the way the world works. You'll thank me for it later because I'm a hero. In the same way that Jack Bauer is our poster boy for torture, Penelope Garcia, above all others, really, but there's many other examples of this type, Penelope Garcia is our poster girl for NSA spying. That you know what? When you hear everything that the NSA does and all the information that they gather, that they have recordings of all of our cell phone conversations, they just keep it all. Oh, well, we don't look at it. I mean, you know, unless there's a reason that we need to investigate this person, and then we have the information available, but you can trust us with this. I swear we're not doing scans of all traffic for certain keywords and then and then using that information to find other legal excuses to investigate that person so we can admit our evidence. No, we would never do that. That doesn't happen. We all look at what the NSA does, and we're all outraged by it, and we all agree that we don't want the NSA doing that. We don't want them gathering all of our information. We don't want them to have the right to hack our cell phones and listen to us even when we think our cell phone is turned off, to hack our laptops and watch us through our webcams even when we think the webcam is shut off, that the ability to do virtually anything and gather any information, which is not entirely realistic. All right. They are not as all powerful and Orwellian as all of that, but pretty damn close sometimes. I mean, to the point where, I have a little sticker. And I don't know where I found the sticker, but it says fun on it. I have my fun sticker taped over my webcam because I never use my webcam. If I ever have a reason to use my webcam, if I need to Skype somebody or if something, then I'll peel my little sticker off and I'll have my webcam, but in the meantime, I keep it covered, and I can't stop them from listening to me because I'm not going to shut off my microphone. I can't disable it. I have a podcast to record, for God's sake. But yeah, my camera, I keep covered for just that reason, because I don't trust them. Not that they have any reason to look at me, not that I've done anything wrong. I don't care. I don't want them looking at me. Just keep up on this soapbox. As long as I'm up here, and I have such a great view from this height, the idea that we're getting to the point where there are courts saying that if you get pulled over for anything, the cops can take your cell phone. Think about that. This is, the cops pull you over for anything. They have the right to take your cell phone, which means, because, God forbid, what if you have, for example, drug-related information and activity, and if we don't take your cell phone right away, well, then you're going to delete those texts, and we won't have them as evidence against you. So once we pull you over, we should be able to grab your phone right away, just as part of the routine search that, you know, we pull you over, and we say, hey, I need to see your license, I need to see your registration, proof of insurance, and, oh, yeah, hand over your cell phone. And then they take the cell phone back to their car, they can download all the information that you have, and then hand you your cell phone back. So you've now got your property returned to you, but they've just stolen your whole life. They have everything. And that's going to be legal. The challenges in the court are coming to the point where, yeah, if you've been arrested for anything, your cell phone, your personal property is completely up for grabs. That if you get pulled over, yeah, you bet, absolutely. They pull you over for any violation, it is acceptable to take your phone and download all your information. And there's justifications for it, and I think they're all crap. But it's happening. So, having finished my outrage at all of that, we all agree that we don't want that. I mean, we want the government to be able to catch bad guys. Sure we do. But they shouldn't be able to do that. Well, we'll take a look at Penelope Garcia, who is, because she's quirky and she's an ex-hacker, so ex-criminal, she's hipster and she's punk and she's cool and edgy, okay? But her function on that show is to do every bit of evil crap that we think the NSA shouldn't be able to do. That's what she does. But it's all justified because, well, that's how we catch these guys. I mean, we're, you know, he's got a live feed. This murder is on camera. We need to find where that is. Penelope, get on it. I'm almost there. Blah, blah, blah. And so she's hacking into everything, every web chat, every phone call, everything. And there's no warrants. There's no legal procedure. There's no nothing. This show, you just walk in and take whatever you want because, well, we need that information. That's the only way we're going to catch this serial killer, is we have to be able to spy on everyone's information. I mean, they have had episodes where, and this is a regular occurrence on Criminal Minds, and this is probably why I'm going to have to stop watching the show, is because it's getting to where it's starting to bug me so much, is regular occurrences where they say, okay, we need to find this guy. He's going to live in this radius. So she's pulling up residential records. All right. Well, that's a lot of people. Okay. You need to look for someone who's been through the criminal justice system. Wait, aren't those records locked? Nope. She's got access to that. Okay. Yeah. And they'll have been through the criminal justice system, and possibly have a parent who has a mental disorder like this, this, or this. She's got all those records. She's looking up people's medical records. She's looking up their institutional records. She's looking up their juvenile records. She's every bit of information that's accessible on anyone's computer anywhere in the world is instantly accessible to her, and we applaud her because she just saved the day. She's the nerd in the background who saved the day by being really good at computers. And yet the fact that she's completely violating our privacy to do it and violating literally hundreds and thousands of people's privacy all at once in order to narrow it down to this one person, yeah, we're all cool with that because, hey, we caught the bad guy. And they're justifying it. And I don't think that Criminal Minds or NCIS or Warehouse 13, I don't think any of them have that agenda. That's not what they're looking at doing. This is just a really cool tool, and it's a really cool badass character. But if this stuff were possible, I wouldn't want it to be legal. I wouldn't want it to be that easy for the FBI or any investigative organization, any government organization. I wouldn't want it to be that easy for them to go in and just rifle through everyone's information without a warrant, without due process, without any review whatsoever, because there is none. That's just terrifying. So, I'm sorry to take my Roku so far off track, but it just hit me like a ton of bricks this week going, wow, that's what I'm cheering? I'm cheering violation of privacy? This is killing me. Wow, that is so wrong. So yeah, I'm going to have to stop watching Criminal Minds. It's too bad because I kind of like the show, but that's the way it goes. I've lost my notes now. Where did they go? Ah, here they are. Oh, and that brings me to the badass movie quote of the week. Hey, I found another one. This is great. I was listening to FilmSack this week, and they did the movie Hard Rain, which I saw 20 years ago, and it was a terrible movie. Hard Rain was just not a good movie. But they played a bunch of clips, and they got to this one by Randy Quaid, of all people, and I just thought it was beautiful. This is the definition of badass when it comes to badass movie quote of the week. So here it is. Randy Quaid as the sheriff in the really, really crappy movie Hard Rain. And this is, he's turned from good guy to bad guy. He's suddenly in it for the money. I don't even know if I need all this set up for it, but he suddenly decided he's in it for the money and he's going to make off with the big haul. And when confronted, Randy Quaid says, quote, "For 20 years, I've been eating shit. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So now, I'm changing the menu. From here on, everything I eat is going to be shit-free." End quote. See? Isn't that great? That's really cheesy. Yeah, but really a great badass quote. From Randy Quaid of all people. That's awesome. I'm glad to see Randy make good out of his crazy. That's wonderful, isn't it? We're done with that. That is the end of the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. So, what's up next? That's right, the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send me your question or topic to me by email or, better yet, in a private message on our forums, and I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And you know what? That is really awkward, and I've thought it several times. You want to hear me haver on about something? Send your question or topic to me by email. No, that's all right. It's just the repeat of the word "to." I just thought I was being repetitive there, but I guess I'm not. Okay. Anyway, that doesn't matter. What does matter is that R2 has just rolled me up a 31. And if I get my Pod-O-Matic list in front of me, 31, which I, by the way, got some new Pod-O-Matics from people this week. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Darks. You guys are awesome. I've already added them to the list. I've cleaned up. I've randomized. We're ready to go. None of that stalling like last week. 31 is from Zimney. And Zimney says, "How much cash do you have on you right now?" Hold on. Just wait. Let me look. I got my keys. I got my other keys. I have a ballpoint pen because I have to have a pen on me all the time now because I have my, I have my pocket mod with my master list. So I cannot be caught without a pen. A receipt from Walmart, a dragon coin, which is really cool. Big old oversized, bigger than the silver dollar. The dragon coin was a promotional item from some online tabletop thing at Gen Con a few years ago. And that's it. Oh, and dice. I always have dice. I've got a 20-sided, a 6-sided, and a 12. Well, I don't know why I don't have 10s. Maybe the 20 can just substitute for it, but apparently I have dice on me too. I have no cash. None whatsoever. I have my wallet full of credit cards. But my last $10 I gave away to my son this morning because he had to turn in something for band. So I got nothing. Sorry. 19. 19 is from Zimny again. Zim says, what is your favorite RPG class or archetype? And in parentheses, he says, from any game. Look, clearly I'm a fan of bards. I love my bard. I have made, in the last several years, I've come up with 3 bard characters when I thought I might play in a game or when I needed, I was testing out some, 3 different bard characters, I just love bards. I really like that versatility. I like that jack of all trades. I like that social aspect of it. Bards are great, but that's D&D Pathfinder is my bards. If I'm playing in other games, I enjoy intellectual characters, but for me, it's not so much about the class or archetype. For me, it's the race. The biggest thing that I like is I like people who are different. I like people, and I don't like to play pretty people. I would prefer to not play pretty people. When I was younger, it was always dwarves. I love dwarves. And I still am very fond of dwarves, but I feel like I've kind of overdone them. I made for Shadowrun, Sun Tin was my ultimate dwarf character. I love that guy. I still love him. Old drunk samurai bastard. And he was great. But now my dwarves are played out. I like gnomes because gnomes are goony looking. I like half-orcs, love half-orcs. And right now I'm playing a half-orc bard. It couldn't be better. If I'm playing Shadowrun, it's trolls, or orcs. Although I don't like orcs as much in Shadowrun for some reason. They feel kind of ordinary to me. I really like trolls and dwarves if I'm playing Shadowrun. But anything that is freakish and ugly, I really, really enjoy. And I don't know why. That's just part of my makeup. 6. Just plain old 6. And this one is from a Mr. Ronster. Ronster asks, do you drink tap water, bottled water, or both? No, I drink tap water. I don't, because I'm not, and I don't purify it, I don't do anything to it, I just drink tap water. And if the tap water tastes nasty, then I'll drink my Diet Dr. Pepper. That's, you know, I'm not picky about it. Water's water, and I hate paying $1 for a bottle of water. I hate paying $2 for a bottle of water even more. And I will drink bottled water every once in a while, especially, if we're going a long trip, sometimes for convenience, you know, if you stop at the right gas station or grocery store, you can buy the big liter-sized bottle of water for under $1. And that's, you know, still paying for water is a little weird, but I don't mind it for that because, you know, you need to stay hydrated. You're going to be out hiking, camping, whatever. But for the most part, no, I just drink tap water. Especially around the house, tap water all the time. And you would think, well, Mike, why don't you just get a water bottle, fill it with tap water, and then you're on your way. You know what? I should do that. I should. But my problem is I am so bad about cleaning them. I will buy a new water bottle. I will fill it up with tap water. I will take it out with me on whatever trip. And then when I get back, with it, I wind up, either it's empty or it's not empty, but either way, I wind up, the thing is still sealed and it sits in that backpack or it's sitting down there with the camping gear and I forget to scrub it and wash it out and let it dry and the whole business. And it winds up, if there's even a tiny bit of moisture in it when it got sealed up, you open it up and it's like musty. Ugh. Ugh. No, I don't want to drink out of that. And so, you know, and if I do, well, now I've got to clean the damn thing up and I've got to get the bottle scrubber out and I've got to really work it and make sure it's rinsed well and get it dried. And it's not that much work, but I never think of washing it until, oh, it's time to go. We have to leave now. I mean, we're like leaving now. We need water. Okay, grab a water bottle. Oh, those are kind of gross. Shoot, I don't have time to clean those. Tell you what, we'll just pick one up on the way. Let's do that. Double aught. That's a winner. I'm sorry. I'm so excited about the double aught. I don't know why. 100 is from my brother Kyle. And Kyle says, Frozen. Am I right? I mean, am I right? Oh, dude, Frozen. Hell yes, Frozen. I love Frozen. Frozen is a great movie. Frozen is a traditional Disney movie with not one, but two, count them, two Disney princesses. Oh, talk about bang for your buck. And not that way. You're dirty. Stop it. But they got two Disney princesses, so double the merchandising potential. And it's beautiful. It's a traditional, gorgeous animation, wonderful characters, lots of good humor, and it's a straight-up musical without any apology. And it ends with a message that, hey, love at first sight is a bunch of crap. You're just going to get yourself hurt. Stop doing that. By the end of it, she's got a love interest, but it's not even like we've really, you know, it's not like we've really finalized that, because the important part is we need true love to save the day. And you know where you're going to find true love? Family. That's where you're going to find true love. It was gorgeous. It was wonderful. It was a positive, empowering message that included two Disney princesses and lots of girly girl potential without being demeaning to women, without empowering them and allowing those sisters to save each other. And it was wonderful. It was just really, really wonderful and entertaining as all get out. I enjoy watching that movie. I enjoy singing the songs. Just great times. That is number 9. Back to the top of the list. And we're not going to be able to do a whole lot more of these. We're at an hour 15 and I got to get out of here. So, number 9 is from Stan. What did I tell you? What's your shoe size? 12. Oh, although, no, the shoes I'm wearing right now, holy crap, I don't know what happened with these, but I put on the 12s and they hurt. And so I'm actually wearing a 13 right now. So I don't know if it's just this brand. I don't know if the sizing of shoes is evolving and I'm just caught in the middle of it. No clue, but I'm wearing a 13 right now and they're really nice, really comfortable shoes. I like these. What is that? Oh, 95. I couldn't tell what that 9 was. 95 from Zimny again. And Zimny says, would a thrown halfling deal more damage with a spear jab? Yes. Yes, absolutely. If you're talking a spear jab, then yes. If you can pitch the halfling, then let's assume that you've practiced this maneuver, and when you throw him, he has whatever momentum you've already given him from throwing him, plus he jabs at the last second. So he gets the regular strength of his jab plus any momentum you can get from throwing him. And especially if you're standing back there with a half-orc with a 20 strength, or 22, let's assume we're 8th level already, you can get some good speed on a halfling. A halfling is only about 30 pounds. I can throw heavier weapons than that. So yeah, you throw that sucker, and then he jabs at the same time. Do the old Colossus Wolverine speedball maneuver, or whatever they call that. Was that their fastball? Their fastball special, that's what it was. Yeah. Of course you can get some extra momentum in there. That'll hurt. I think it's foolish and dangerous, but it would look really, really cool. And if any of my players ever tried that, they would get amazing style point bonuses for pulling off something so damnably cool. So, I'm all for it, dude. All right, 98. 98 is from Billy Bob. That's cool. Billy Bob says, who's your favorite old fat actor? Oh. Who are my choices? I mean, okay, I think old fat actor. Marlon Brando obviously jumps to mind immediately. But other actors who have gotten fat over the years that used to be, I'm especially thinking guys that used to be heartthrobs, used to be, chiseled hunks, and now they've really let themselves go. Probably Val Kilmer. I've always liked Val Kilmer, and I think he's a good actor. Not a great actor, but a good actor, and I like watching him and stuff. And as he's gotten older, Val Kilmer looks he's a near twin to my old college roommate. They look a lot alike. And as they've aged, my roommate, my brother, myself, and Val Kilmer, apparently, we've all aged in the same way, and we've put on weight in the same way, so we have the same big guy build. And I still think Kilmer is cool. I still think he can do stuff, and I just wish I was seeing him more often. You know, I like Val Kilmer. I mean, there's Shatner. Shatner's always great. But Shatner's been an old fat actor for a while. And while I like Shatner's style and I like his ability to mock his own image, and have fun with it, and I follow him on Twitter and he's really funny on a regular basis. He's also kind of a one note joke sometimes with his, you know, playing that exaggerated Shatner-esque personality. James Spader has, I mean, he's still brilliant. Even having gotten old and fat, and I was never a big James Spader fan of him, you know, being the young teen heartthrob. But I get that at one time he was considered sexy, and if you ask Lucy, he's still sexy. Whatever, I don't care. He's a great actor and he's a lot of fun. Oh, you know who's disappointing as an old fat actor? Brendan Fraser. Oh, poor Brendan Fraser. He is just not aging well. And part of it is, again, I'm not seeing him in enough stuff. I don't think I've seen Fraser in something new since he was on Scrubs, as the imaginary friend. He was, spoiler, he's dead. He died of cancer. So deal with it. But Brendan Fraser he was one of my favorites when he was young because he was just so charming, personable, funny for being such a startlingly good-looking man. And did you see George of the Jungle? He was cut. Oh my God. He made women swoon, and some men too, I'm sure. And he was amazing. I loved Brendan Fraser when he was young. He was just great. And then, recently he's going bald. I think he's wearing a rug. I'm not sure, but he's going bald and he's gotten fat. And when I say fat, I mean built like me. He's a big guy. He's just gotten kind of doughy and pasty, and there's nothing wrong with being that, because as I've mentioned in others before, there's lots of actors who have put on weight and gotten all old and jowly and saggy, and yet they're still doing great work and they can still be brilliant actors and have a good time. And Fraser, I'm just not seeing him around as much. And I feel like, I don't know. I feel like we're missing an opportunity. And maybe it's that he's just not that great an actor. I don't know. I mean, you know, I never saw him in anything really overly dramatic back in the day. I mean, he was a pretty lighthearted romantic comedy kind of character, but yeah, he just doesn't seem to have aged as well as some of the others. And maybe that'll change. Maybe we'll get to see him make his comeback. Maybe he'll do that Travolta-esque comeback where he gets his own Pulp Fiction and something really cool happens. You know, cause Travolta chews up the scenery with the best of them. I mean, he can Nick Cage it all over the place. But Travolta's got gravitas. I mean, even with the pot belly and the receding hairline, and yeah, Travolta's kind of a silly person in the first place. I mean, just think back to Vinnie Barbarino for all that. But Travolta can still, again, gravitas. He can still carry that dramatic overacting a lot of times, but that dramatic sense, and he can still work a scene. I mean, you know, no matter what you think about the gay rumors and the Scientology garbage and the anything else that crazy crap that swirls around him and his family. All I know about him is what I see on screen, and from that, dude can still act, and the dude still deserves to get roles. So, you know, cool in that way. But again, Val Kilmer, I have just a soft spot in my heart for Val Kilmer. I want to see that guy get more work. I think he's really talented, and I don't know. I identify with Val Kilmer. I like him. It's just something about him. Yeah, no, that's it. 60. And it's going to have to be our last one. Gotta be. I told you that we were done a while ago, and then I didn't do it. So, 60 is for sure a repeat, but we'll do it anyway because it's still, well, maybe we'll do one more after this. It's from Daz. Daz says, if you had a real lightsaber, would you use it for good? And what color would it be? All right. My color for my lightsaber is going to be a sickly swamp green. And of course I would use it for good. Although, the best part about, lightsabers is that there's no mess. Now, obviously, if you chop off an arm in a cantina, you're going to get blood on the floor and you're going to have to offer some cash to get that cleaned up. But, if I'm using it to chop vegetables, if I'm using it to slice meat, if I'm using it, just as a household implement, as a kitchen implement, you cannot beat a lightsaber because it's self-cleaning. Because you've seen, look, it slices perfectly clean. I know it looks like that lightsaber has some thickness to it, and you're so used to the toy lightsabers where you've got that cone that pops out. You're looking at an actual cylinder of lightsaber, so it looks like it's like an inch and a half thick, and that's going to be kind of messy. You couldn't possibly use that for cutting vegetables, but no, that's just the light and the glow of it, because you've seen that it makes perfectly clean cuts, so clearly the actual blade itself is literally razor thin. All right, in whatever direction you go. So if I could get myself a lightsaber knife, like a nice little kitchen-sized knife, cleaver-sized, that would be perfect. I would use the crap out of that thing. So if you call filling, tasty, healthy cooking using it for good, then absolutely I'm using it for good. Now that's the last one, 23. 23 is... Hey, we finish off on Zimny. And Zimny says, what is your favorite type of starship? Clearly, medium-sized cruiser, with lots of storage space that is used for smuggling. All right. And it can be a Millennium Falcon or it can be a Firefly class ship like the Serenity. Either one of those are perfectly fine with me. I love that because, again, it's a perfect setting for that character drama. It's a perfect setting for that type of action. That's where your smugglers with a heart of gold do their best work. This is where Han Solo and Captain Mal really shine. And that's the kind of starship I love. I mean, obviously, I'm a Firefly fan. Toy boat. All right, I'm good. So yeah, that's going to be my favorite. That's just clearly the best there is. I'm not going to roll another one. No, R2, you're done. We are finished. So having finished that, it is time for a recap. GLaDOS.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's in the Garage and She Blinded Me with Science, as performed by William Shatner, unless I screwed it up again. All of these songs are available on iTunes. You check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't include them in my podcast if I didn't love them myself. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes and write a nice review for me. Or check out my Facebook page, facebook.com/nerdpride radio. Stop at the Facebook page, click like. It is 9 seconds out of your day. It's not even that long. Do it for a buddy. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball, Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others. All free. All the time. I really need to write a new game so I have some new material to put up there, but when am I going to have time for that? If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio, and I promise I will actually respond to you, or you can contact me on Twitter @nerdprideradio, but to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is to come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, send me a message, we will hang out together, we will be best friends in the world, and we will have fun. All right, now it's time for my post-credit segment where I still don't have a name for this one. You guys have not helped me out. Come up with a name for this segment. Something. Parting shots. See, that's kind of trite, but something. I need something here. I'm going to go back to the forums. I'm at the start of this podcast. I posted up that I am recording now and asked people if they wanted to add anything. So let's see what we got. Ronster says, do it. There's still lots more great Palpatine jokes, I swear. They are clearly never ending. Hey, Palpatine, this roast beef sandwich is really, really dry. Oh, chew it. They don't stop. Just when you think it's all done, Ronster then says, are these the Chrome Troopers of Star Wars Episode 7? Wow, that is really cool. It's almost as if they took a Cylon and interbred it with Darth Vader and or a Stormtrooper. That is really cool. That is a good picture. He's also got a link, but I don't have enough time for that. I'll have to follow that later. Eliahead says, what do I have in my pocket? Riddle or question? Was Bilbo Baggins full of poop in thinking or convincing himself that he was in the right here? Oh, yeah, no. Bilbo was a complete douchebag on that one. That is and the fact that Gollum fell for that, the fact that Gollum even allowed it, is complete and utter crap. There is no way. It's not a riddle. Everyone knows it's a riddle. It's not a riddle. And you can't pose it that way. All right? Gollum should have called shenanigans the moment that question came out of his mouth. All right? Should have said, no, that's not going to work. Ask another one. And the fact that Bilbo got away with it is just cheating. I get it's Gollum. It's Gollum, and he's a murderous little thug, and he's evil, and he was going to take any excuse to gnaw on Bilbo's bones anyway. But really, that was unfair, and I've always, always disliked that part of that scene for exactly that reason, dude. It just sets me off wrong. I'm not a fan. I love Lord of the Rings. I love The Hobbit. Can't wait for the next movie to come out. But that one moment, yeah, that was just cheating. Just completely wrong. So, anyway, we're all done. Say goodnight, R2.